it's Phil. You're listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. This is episode 331. It's part two of the program. You do need to subscribe. You really do, so that you don't miss anything. In fact, go back and listen to part one.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to do it right now. You can go ahead and keep listening to part two, but we'll try to make sense of life without requiring you to go back and hear information that would set up whatever it is we're talking about this hour. Does that make any sense? No, of course it doesn't. It did in my head when I started explaining it. So let me tell you who's here today. Skylar Charisma is here with us. So is Kelly Bennett. And intern Ricky is here. And this hour, we're going to hear from Gary Warner, our travel guy. And he's going to talk about... No, shh. It's
a secret.
Yeah.
Secret.
Except I know what it is.
You know what it is.
We don't.
Bob Olson is the organizer of the Devil's Tower UFO Convention. So folks that believe in aliens and have seen UFOs and a handful of people who believe they were abducted by aliens, they're all going to Devil's Tower, which is nestled between Hewlett, Wyoming, and Sundance, Wyoming.
Ah.
A couple of huge towns.
Yeehaw.
There you go.
But you know what Devil's Tower is? It's that butte, right?
A butte?
You look up butte. You remember elementary school. You learned what a butte was.
It's spelled like butt.
I think it's a butte.
No, it's spelled like butt with an E after it.
Yeah.
And Stu Herrera, any moment now, is going to join us. He's one of the friends on the show and an old friend of mine and Mike Stark. As well, and so he's going to talk about this charity bike ride that he does each year. He's on his way to the starting point. We'll find out what that is and more. And visit our website, philhewlettandfriends.com, and subscribe. And also look at all the ways that you can listen to the program. It's pretty spectacular because there are so many ways. And when you get tired of looking at the internet and listening to podcasts and all of that, you might as well lay down on your bed. I'm sorry that your bed is just awful. Unless, of course, you sleep on a Droma bed, then I retract all of that because you have a state-of-the-art, ultra-comfortable, eco-friendly bed, all built to fit in a tiny little box.
Mm-hmm.
So it will ship to your house, standard shipping, and then when you open it up...
It pops.
It doesn't explode in your face like a car airbag, but no, it is wonderful. And the folks at Droma, they are so confident about their bed that you're going to love it, that they give you a 200-night risk-free trial. And they'll ship it to you for free in the 48 contiguous states. The Droma bed, Droma, just a wonderful company, and I want you to get involved with them. Here's how you do it. Go to philhewlettandfriends.com, click on the sponsor tab, look for the Droma button, and then once you're there, you click on that, you'll get an offer code that'll get you $75 off. So,
nice.
There you go.
Droma, dream on one.
Mm.
All right, don't forget, we have a Facebook page, Phil Hewlett and Friends. Look for us, and we are on Twitter at FAF Show, PHAF, like Phil Hewlett and Friends, Show.
Are you on Instagram?
We have an Instagram, but it's woefully ignored.
Aww.
Yeah. Aww. Yeah, it's at FAF Show.
That. Everyone loves Instagram.
Do they?
FAF Show.
What do you do with it? You got to put the link to the latest episode in your profile.
Yeah.
That's the only way to get people
to click.
It's a photo.
Screenshot.
I'll do a selfie with us and we'll put it on there. How's
All right.
That?
Okay. Sounds good. All right. So we have to, while I'm talking about our Facebook page, we have a couple of stories on there that we haven't even talked about yet.
I know. Yeah. This one is pretty interesting.
Which one is that?
This one is a lady.
Yeah.
You know, you dig in your garden.
Oh, I know which one this is.
And you're like, you know, tending to your garden. You're just weeding the family farm.
That's right.
And the next thing you know, you lose your diamond ring.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
This lady in Alberta, Canada, 13 years ago, she was weeding. She lost her diamond
13
ring.
13 years ago.
Yeah. But the diamond ring was given, she was given to her in 1951.
Oh, I see. So she had the ring in 1951.
Right.
And 13 years ago, she lost it.
13 years ago, she lost it weeding in her garden.
Okay. Oh,
and she couldn't find it anywhere.
Oh, my gosh.
She searched everywhere. She couldn't find it. She gave up trying to find it. And she never told her husband because she thought she was going to get in trouble.
And her husband is...
He passed away 5 years ago.
Did he? Yeah, but in the meantime, prior to that, he didn't pay attention that carefully, did he?
Probably not. Or I don't know if the story says that she went out and got another ring, but I don't know. Anyway, the story goes is that the ring appeared pinched tight around a malformed carrot.
Oh, a carrot grew through the ring?
Yes. And I sent you a photo. You can put it up on the website.
And there it is. It's on our Facebook page.
The daughter-in-law, she lives at the farm now. She was harvesting some of the carrots for the supper with her dog, Billy.
Yeah.
And while she was pulling the carrots, she noticed one of them looked very strange. She says that she almost fed it to her dog, but decided to keep it and just threw it in the pail. When she washed the carrot off, got all the mud and stuff, she found the ring.
Wow. What a surprise. Wow. You know what this carrot looks like? It looks like what I believe maybe my fingers will look like when I'm 70 or something. and around my wedding ring. That is something.
But it does have a happy ending. The lady is 84, and the ring fits perfectly.
Yeah. How about that?
That's sweet.
Yeah.
Good for her, and good for the carrot, because that's one of the best pictures I've seen in a while.
Of a carrot,
Of a carrot.
Very good.
Yes, of a carrot. Oh, gosh, but you know, when somebody gave her that ring and proposed to her with that ring, you know, wasn't that a romantic situation? Yeah. And people are proposing in all sorts of ways all the time, Skylar. What was your proposal like? Was it one of those fancy ones that it got posted online and became viral?
No, mine was very romantic because he couldn't like hold it in any longer. He was trying to wait as long as he could to propose. Aww. But we were just actually in a living room, and next thing I know, he's in front of me on his knees and he's proposing, and I had no idea it was coming. Aww. So it wasn't like on the beach. It was more romantic because he just couldn't keep it in any longer.
Oh, how nice. And nobody died, so that's good.
It's always a
no
plus.
No one died, but it's not funny you say that. Funny you should say that, because
it's not funny.
It's so not funny, but it's funny. All right.
There was this couple in Japan that I just read about. They were driving across the Irabu Bridge in Okinawa, and the girlfriend was driving, and the boyfriend said, "Hey, pull over real quick." And so he's like, "I want to show you something." I guess it was just like a nice little, you know, moment, Kodak moment. And so they pull over, and he proposes to her, and she had no idea it was coming. And so, of course, she says yes, and he is just so ecstatic. He jumps for joy, and he jumps up on the railing of the bridge, and he was so excited. He lost his balance, and he fell 100 feet into the sea and died.
Oh,
I'm not joking.
Gosh.
Did she
body was found 7 hours later.
No, I feel like such a jerk.
Now, wait a minute. Did he put the ring on her first before he left?
You know, they didn't like specify that, but I'm pretty sure he got to put the ring on it before.
Okay. Oh, not that I'm.
He died happy though, right?
Yeah. But he fell in water?
Well, I don't know if he actually
in
made
the
it
sea.
To the, he didn't by fall, the sea.
He didn't fall on concrete or anything.
I don't know. They didn't. They didn't.
No,
shoot
I mean,
pictures.
You fall 100 feet into the ocean, you're probably not gonna do well.
Yeah. That's That's like. But, well, he died happy.
He died happy.
Maybe not. 100 feet to
think about it.
Maybe it was a bad idea.
Really took the plunge.
He just said, she said yes.
We're horrible.
Oh, and now how about her? I mean, now she's got to live with that pain the rest of her life.
She's got to look at that ring every day.
You know?
You're the girl who killed the guy when he proposed to you.
He should have said no.
She's going to have that over her head. And what about the next guy who tries to propose to her? She's going to have some issues.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Don't propose to me. You might die.
Yeah, you think about almost any place you sit or stand, you run the risk of dying because something could fall on you. You could get hit by a truck. An anvil could hit you on the head. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
That's what you
like a cartoon character.
Yeah, exactly. That could happen.
That's right.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, with CPR, you can do CPR.
Yes, you could, but here it wasn't true love. Otherwise, she would have dived in after him.
She would have.
Oh, that's a good point.
Swan dive off the pier.
Let me off help
the,
you.
Beautifully.
Off the bridge. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then land right, you know, gosh, 100 feet though. That's
the big drop.
Hitting the ocean at a 100-foot drop is like hitting cement.
Cement. I was just going to say that. Yeah. All right.
My goodness. All right. Let's see. What else do we have? I've got something here. Oh, you know what? We've been talking about all the hurricanes and the earthquakes. Another natural disaster, and sometimes it's man made, is fires.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And large swaths of area. And Southern California has its fire season. Northern California has fire season. Lots of places, California, Oregon, Washington, Nevada, have a pretty significant fire season. And then, of course, the hurricanes. So what does this do for your travel plans. Our travel guy, Gary Warner, is here, and he's thought about this, and we'll take what, oranges and make orange juice, or
lemons and make lemonade.
There you go. Is that how it works, Gary? We're going to find a way to turn a negative into a positive, and that's what I like about you.
As long as it's not tomatoes and tomato juice. That
No, not even a Snappy Tom. What the heck was that?
A Snappy Tom.
I like
wow.
Snappy Tom.
Remember those?
Really what's going on with all these fires is you have to determine why it is that you're going. Obviously, if it's one of these tours of duty where you're going to see grandma, it doesn't matter if the place is on fire, you know, 30 miles down the road. But if it's an enjoyable vacation type trip, you really need to do some research ahead of time and sort of measure your ability to handle these things. I have a friend right now who is on a very long trip, car trip from Southern California up the coast to Oregon, into Washington, then back down through the center of those states. So it's basically turned into a greatest fires of 2007 tour.
Wow.
And, yeah.
And so these are places that have had 10 years of growth back already. If
oh, yeah.
2007. I mean,
you know, you got to remember, there's 199 fires, wildfires, that are burning right now throughout the United States. And that there are over 10 of them that are mega fires, over 100,000 acres. One of the mega fires is right at the California-Oregon border along Highway 101 and 1. And then Highway 84 is shut down just east of Portland. Not Highway 84, Interstate 84. So these are big disruptors. And we've had a few days where the air has been over 400 AQI. And that doesn't mean anything to people except that on a normal day, your AQI is going to be about 25.
Oh.
So there is just a huge amount of particulate matter in the,
AQI,
in the air.
AQI, ash quotient indicator? Is that
no, I think it's air quality indicator. No. People can go to, you know, one of the places you find out a lot of things when these things are happening around you. There's a website that the EPA has called AirNow, just airnow.com, and you can look and see where the fires are and what the air quality is at any given time in your town and in other towns. So you can kind of look ahead. You know, the other problem out there, Phil, which we talked about a little bit last week, is the hurricane season. And sure enough, there's lots of people who are down in Florida, or hopefully that's where they are. There's others who are out on the islands for these cutlery cruises during the fall, which is hurricane season. And really, the hurricane season begins August 1st. So we've already got two major hurricanes, the one that hit Texas, and now Irma is coming in across U.S. Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, and then it's going to hit Florida probably after the weekend, it looks like. And there's another one out there, another named hurricane. And it's, you know, we're barely out of August, and we've got three named hurricanes. So the problem for a lot of folks is, like we talked about last week, is, okay, well, I'm going to get travel insurance. No, you're not this late. You know, the companies aren't stupid. They're not going to sell you travel insurance at this point. But if you're thinking about going in October, November, December, you might want to think about getting travel insurance.
By the way, that AirNow website is .gov. Just double checked it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course. And the .com is going to...
Mr. Trump hasn't turned everything into a business yet.
No, not yet. Yeah, but airnow.com will install some kind of a virus on your computer if you go there. So I'm sorry.
That's wonderful.
No, I'm kidding. Oh, my. I am kidding.
Well, will it steal my Social Security number? Equifax.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, that's probably already happened. So let me ask you this, because we do talk about cruises a great deal. And during this hurricane season, I mean, who's going to get on a boat, even if you've already prepaid? And if you don't have your travel insurance or your cruise insurance or whatever it is, you're just kind of stuck holding the bag, aren't you?
Right. And here's the thing is that people have to make a decision on, are they willing to eat the ticket and hope they can get something back from the cruise line, Or are they going to go on down and in either getting stuck at the point of departure or at the somewhere out on one of the destinations? So, you know, for the most part, if you're a someone who cruises a lot and you're a customer of one line in particular, even if it's maybe only once every other year, you probably have enough of a customer base with them to call them up and say, hey, can we just move this to next year, you know, or something like that. And they will probably accommodate you at a reasonable amount of money or perhaps for no money at all. If it's a one-time buy on a, you know, one of these bottom end cruises, particularly one that's not part of a corporation, you're stuck, you know?
I have a question for you, and this is coming from left field, but it is entirely related.
I used to play left field.
Good. It is entirely related to what we're talking about here in the hurricanes. And if the storm track travels where it's supposed to, after it makes landfall, it's going to continue on at rather strong and rather wet and a lot of wind and go right through Orlando, which is possibly one of the biggest tourist cities in the country. And or if Orlando and all of the attractions there, Disney and Universal, et cetera, get taken out for any amount of time, I mean, that is devastating to the industry and to the city and the region, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is. These are all devastating to these regions. We talked a little bit about Mexico last week and how the new travel warning down there is devastating the tourism season. Often, even if you do have travel insurance, it's not going to pay for something like heavy rain. It's not going to pay for I was disappointed, you know, because I got to Orlando. I bought my ticket separately and then I got to Orlando. Then the kids and I couldn't go to Disneyland, so I want my money back. No, that's not going to happen. So it's either you call an audible and see what you can do with that ticket, where else you can go, or because a lot of it's also about time. People have to plan their vacations well in advance. So, you know, if you go to Orlando and you want to go to Disneyland and it's going to be raining buckets, they'll, short of it being disastrous rain levels, they'll probably open the gates and say, come on in.
I used to work at Disneyland and they will.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They will not close the doors because people literally plan their vacations ahead of time. And you're so right. That if you show up and it's raining, we worked in the rain.
Yeah, but you can, the property could be red tagged.
Well, I just read the, I just got an alert on my phone that the governor of Florida just told everybody in that area to get to higher ground right now. And it's being evacuated.
In the Orlando area.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
See,
it's a big deal. Higher ground? Listen, I
Inland Empire. Inland. That's what he said. Yeah. Sorry.
Was in the Everglades once, and there was a bump in the road, and there's a little sign by it that said highest point in Florida.
Oh, Lordy.
And it was under 500 feet, I think. It was definitely under 1,000 feet. But if you ever fly into Florida on a clear day, it looks like someone has spilled pancake batter on the ocean. So high ground, maybe you get up in a very sturdy building, I guess. But, Orlando at least doesn't have the storm surge that a lot of these people are going to have to deal with at the coast.
Yeah. Well, Gary, thank you for all of your insight and the whole concept of touring former fire locales, you know, and giving it some space so things can grow back and just see how the communities have recovered. And
they do come back.
Yes. Yep. And see the new life, the rejuvenation that happens in every case, because this is the circle of life,
exactly.
As we learned from a cartoon.
Look at New Orleans.
I know it's hard to say. I know it's hard to say, but money is just money. Don't put yourself and your family into a dangerous situation or into a really lousy situation.
Yeah.
Just see what you can do, because once you leave, you're not going to get anything. Gotcha. But if you're still at home and you say, gosh, I just don't want to go, and you ask for a trade, you might get lucky.
Gotcha, Gary. Thank you so much. And
take care, guys.
You too.
Bye.
See you, Gary.
So long. There he goes.
Bye.
All right. Coming up, we didn't hear from Stu yet. Stu's on the road, so he's got to actually arrive at the Bun Boy before he can call us.
No, the Applebee's.
The Flying Jack.
Yeah. So we're going to give it another shot. He may call at any moment. In the meantime, well, let's continue on with what we're doing. And Kelly, Do you know CPR?
Yeah, I do.
You do?
I even know the Heimlich maneuver.
Are you certified?
I am not certified, but I can do it because it's... Did you know that you can do... You just remember Staying Alive by the Bee Gees.
Staying alive. That's how fast you pump the chest.
Exactly. That's how you do it. But it's the breathing part, too, because I did have to take a CPR class for infants.
Yeah.
Because of my son's situation when he was born. But anyway... You should know CPR. You really should, because you never know when you might need to use it.
Sure.
And the Heimlich mover. There's this gentleman who, but let me ask you a question first.
Okay.
Is there somebody that you would not give CPR to?
A dead guy?
Well, no, obviously that's
nice.
But, you know, what about would you give a CPR to an animal?
Oh, yeah. See, I have to think about that, because if the animal wakes up, most animals would be probably shocked to see my face in front of theirs, and they might bite half of my face off.
Right. So what kind of animal,
you know,
are you
my
talking?
Sister, who's a big animal activist, she would probably say, "You're horrible. Of course, you have to save the animal's life."
My mother gave CPR to our neighbor's dog, and he was having an epileptic fit, and she actually saved his life.
Wow.
Well, there's a guy. She did. It was really nice. But this guy, his tortoise, fell into a pond and apparently drowned and died. And he found it an hour later. And he pulled the tortoise out, and he did perform CPR for 1 hour.
Wow. No kidding.
1 hour.
He didn't give up. I mean, he's holding this turtle is dead. Uh-uh. It's an ex-turtle. It's expired.
It was a turtle.
It's pushing up daisies.
No, well, he said he looked quite dead and limp. He said I decided to put my mouth around the head, give a short few blows. And I stretching its head out a little bit.
Yeah.
A small half teaspoon of water came out of its mouth, which I had opened.
Oh, that's so sweet.
So he performed.
Are you crying, Skylar?
Yeah.
I get weepy at these stories. You know that.
So he was like, you know, pumping on its chest and he was pulling on its legs. Then, are you ready for this? He detected some movements. Uh-huh. So he started to warm it up with a hairdryer.
Oh.
He massaged his legs and neck.
So smart.
And after a full hour, it started gasping and it opened its eyes.
Aww.
Wow.
Yep. How about that?
What's the turtle's name or tortoise's name?
Frida.
Frida.
Yep.
Frida.
Yeah.
Frida's not free.
Yeah. How about that? Well, he's a bigger man than I, because I think I might have quit after 10 minutes.
I thought I would have broken it. 1 hour.
Yeah. 10 minutes? It's about the max, right? Oh, hey, you know, speaking of 10 minutes, we've been waiting about 20 minutes for a moment to speak with our buddy, our friend, our pal, Stu Herrera, who's been on the show a couple of times as a co-host. And prior to that, we've had him on to talk about this magnificent thing he does every year, putting himself at risk of getting a road rash between his thighs.
Oh,
it's
tell us more about that,
Stu.
Yes, please.
You've got one of those tight fitting bicycle.
They are so sexy.
Outfits,
I'm listening.
Right, and you're ready to go for this annual bike ride that you do. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I got a whole fleet of those things. They're called bibs.
Oh,
yeah.
There you go. And
tiny little biker socks and slip-in shoes.
Yeah.
Helmet, glasses.
Be still, my heart.
How many miles before you start getting you start losing feeling in areas that you never thought would go numb?
You know, the first day we go 90 miles, and by the end of that, we pull into Santa Cruz at the end of that day, and usually a pretty rude wake up call.
All right, so you start in San Francisco, is that right?
Golden Gate Park,
and then over the bridge, and on the way down. And which route do you take?
Well, we don't go over the bridge. We actually start on the, you know, on the southward side. But a couple of years ago, a bunch of us did go just over the bridge just to say we did it, and we'll see if we do it again this year. We generally take Highway 1 all the way down. There's a lot of places on Highway 1 where there's like a bike lane or a bike path that is split off from Highway 1.
Right.
There's also just as many miles, if not more, where we're actually sharing the road, you know, on the side with cars. Anything could happen.
And do you go through Big Sur? And is that passable this year?
We usually go through Big Sur. I was just talking about that a minute ago. Yeah, we're not going through Big Sur this year because it's not passable. There's a bridge out that they're still rebuilding, and there's also a landslide that covered up part of the road. So Big Sur is out, and the Paso Robles is in.
Mm. a little extra heat and none of the sea breeze, right?
Do you know, you don't miss a thing, do you? Yeah. Yeah, the sea breeze is gone and the baking heat of pasta. But, you know, we can get a glass of wine.
Yeah, wine tasting opportunities. Now, tell everybody why you do this.
Well, it's to benefit the Arthritis Foundation. It's their major fundraiser that they hold every year. We usually raise on par about $1 million. And
just your group of bike riders?
Yeah. There's groups within a groups, but the ride as a whole, this event with this year, I think there's about 150 of us.
Okay.
In the past, we've had as many as close to 200. We raise around $1 million.
Wow.
That's great.
Very nice.
Wow. Yeah, it's pretty remarkable between everything that we can raise on our own plus some matching funds and stuff.
And so as an individual, what is your goal this year?
My goal is 10,000, and I've had a crazy year, and I'm only about halfway to my goal right now, so I really need to ring the bell and get some get the coffers filled.
Well, we want to help you with that. Now, where do people go to donate and be part of this?
Yeah, grab a pen.
Okay, it's not easy.
It's not easy to remember, and this is my fault. In the past, I've gotten them. A referral website thing that was just like stewsbutt.com.
But yeah. Stewsbutt?
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
The web address is CCC17, and the CCC stands for California Coast Classic. So it's CCC17.Kintera, with a K, K-I-N-T-E-R-A, .org.
All right.
/
Yep.
/ Stewvox.
Yeah.
Stewvox.
Kintera is the producer of
One slash Kintera, or two slashes? One slash, right?
One slash.
Yeah. Okay, so CCC17.Kintera, K-I-N-T-E-R-A.org / Stewvox. All right, so we will create a link, and we're going to make it easy for people to visit. And then we're going to visit it as well. And I know I'm going to donate. I try to donate each year when I remember. Sometimes I forget, and I apologize for that.
And so, what organization are you raising money for?
The Arthritis Foundation.
Arthritis Foundation.
And this is with a focus on, is it childhood arthritis, or is it expanded beyond that?
Well, it's the Arthritis Foundation addresses arthritis for everybody who gets it. But yeah, a big spotlight does fall on the kids, because they're the ones that really break your heart more than anyone else.
Right.
And there are ambassadors every year along on it's an 8-day ride, and every single day and night. And even in rest stops along the way, there are the kids themselves who have benefited from the work that the Arthritis Foundation does. And they are there, they're living, breathing stories of the successes that that they do, that the Arthritis Foundation has in helping treat the symptoms of the disease. Their stories are generally run along the lines of, as a very young child, they couldn't, they couldn't hardly sit up or stand or anything, or extreme pain in their joints that kept them away from activities and school and the things that kids take for granted, like just, running, playing hide and seek or doing some jumping jacks or something, are out of the question for these kids when this thing knocks them down.
Right.
And with treatment that the Arthritis Foundation provides in both medicinally and therapeutically, these kids are able to live normal lives, and like they're cheerleaders and some of them pedal when they get old enough to join the ride. I'm thinking of one girl that we see every year that does this ride, she is an Arthritis Foundation patient. So it's just a great, great cause. They're a really well-run organization in terms of efficiency and keeping administrative overhead down and stuff like that. They rate highly on all the rankers for what am I trying to say? For charity sites.
Right. Well, you're doing a good job.
All right, yes. And then over the course of 8 days, eventually you're going to end up where? In Los Angeles, downtown?
Yeah, not downtown. The finish line is up at, it's in Pacific Palisades.
Oh, okay. All right.
Ooh.
I pedal all the way to my front door.
How about that? And that, yes, from there you have to go home. Well, Stu, We've just posted your information on our Facebook page, and we'll do more than that. We'll add it to our website, and there'll be links in the RSS feed for the podcast, so anybody who's subscribed will have a direct link when they click on your name to the page where they could pledge and get you past where you are now, which is, I'll tell you where you are, 5,435, and your goal is to get 10,000 before the end of the ride. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm trying to get there before the end of the ride. I mean, we can still accept, you know, donations after the ride, but, yeah, you know, it loses a lot of steam after the ride is over. So I'm really banking on that.
It's too bad you can't put, like, a camera on your head so we can see you ride.
Well, no, he takes lots of pictures. So we'll follow you on we'll follow you on social media, too. Stu Herrera on Facebook, right?
I can't yes. My Facebook page is facebook.com/StuVox.
StuVox, V-O-X, like Latin for voice.
Victor O-X, yes. Oh.
Stu, have a safe ride, and here's to the wonderful work you're doing, and let's get you up to 10,000.
Yeehaw.
I can't thank you enough. Thank you so much, Phil. I really, 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 really appreciate it.
Happy to help.
And I love that story about Frida the tortoise. I almost had tears in my
Oh, my gosh.
Thank you.
You softy.
I mean, yes,
thank you.
Stu doesn't cry.
All right. Hey, Stu, have a great ride.
Thanks, Phil.
All right, there we go. Now, shifting gears, you remember the Steven Spielberg movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, right?
Yeah.
It was set at Devil's Tower in Wyoming, right? You remember what's his name? The actor, the main actor
Richard
in the movie,
Dreyfuss?
Richard Dreyfuss. Yeah, he was making a model of the of Devil's Tower out of mashed potatoes.
That's right.
Just a great scene. Anyway, Devil's Tower. It's a butte. You learned about buttes in school, right? It's located between the cities of Sundance and Hewlett, Wyoming. Yep, Hewlett. Just like me.
I'm Phil Hewlett, Wyoming.
And maybe one of these days I'll visit the mayor and ask for the key to the city. Same, next weekend, Thursday through Saturday, a bunch of people are going to gather in the area for a convention called the Devil's Tower UFO Rendezvous, and I want to find out more about it.
Wow.
So joining us now on the phone is one of the organizers, Bob Olson. Hello, Bob.
Hello, how are you?
I'm great, even better now that you're here. Are you in Hewlett, Wyoming today?
No, today I'm in Sundance.
And how far a walk from Hewlett to Sundance is it?
It's about 45 miles.
Oh, so that's not a walk. Okay, boy, that's big country up there in Wyoming. And so can you see Devil's Tower from both Hewlett and Sundance?
You can see it from Hewlett, but you can't see it from Sundance.
Oh, gotcha. All right. Well, I want to find out about this. Tell me about the event. What are people coming to see and do?
Well, the event is kind of a twofold thing. It's a festival and a convention. The festival part of it involves we're having a alien themed parade. And
oh, people get to dress up?
Oh yeah. We're going to have hopefully floats and
fun.
Kind of UFO themed.
Well, hopefully floats, Bob. It's Thursday.
Yeah.
That's just a few days away.
The parade will be on Saturday the 16th.
Oh, you've got plenty of time to figure out that float thing.
And then after the parade, there will be a costume contest.
Oh, and so people dress up as aliens or their perception of what an alien looks like.
Cool.
And that'll be a professor from Black Hills State is going to be the judge.
Oh,
contest, and that's right in the Civic Center in Hewlett.
Okay.
And then there will also be a Close Encounters Tower Building Contest out of mashed potatoes.
Oh, great.
Oh, nice.
That's awesome. I love that. And so you have to have a fork to make it look just right, to get the striations on the side of you, right?
It's wide open. You can use your imagination.
Oh, my goodness. Now, some of these people who are going to dress up like aliens have an advantage because they purport to have been abducted at one time in their life. Is that correct?
The convention part of it is going to have speakers. We've got speakers coming from all over the United States. And one of them is Travis Walton. And he's one of the most reputed stories of being abducted.
Yes.
I don't know if you've heard of Travis Walton.
Yes, I've heard. I think I've heard him speak a couple of times on the radio about his abduction.
Yep. They did that movie, Fire in the Sky, about his situation.
Yeah, so plenty of people have experienced UFO sightings, myself included, I should point out, and I've said this at least a couple of times on the show before, but we don't necessarily need to get into that now, but it does seem like more and more people are seeing things that are unexplained, and at some point in our lives, the government is going to say something to give us some credence to what we've seen, but for now, they give us an explanation as to why it wasn't a spaceship from another planet. Isn't that right?
That's absolutely correct.
Now, in a large crowd of like-minded folks who are inclined to believe aliens have and continue to visit our planet, never mind that our understanding of physics defies the possibility of that happening, but I get it, and it's our understanding of physics, not the understanding of those in alien cultures. Maybe they've broken the dimensional travel code. Who knows? But amongst this group of believers who will visit Hewlett, Wyoming, be honest, do you expect you're going to see a handful of people who even you will say, that guy's nuts?
Oh, I'm sure they'll come out of the woodwork.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We've already had a lot of contacts from some pretty colorful stories.
Yeah, I can imagine. And the location of Devil's Tower, I mean, if aliens were to visit, it would seem like that would be the perfect spot because it's almost like we built a special landing pad for them, right?
There you go.
Yeah. Now, the first day of the event, I see in the listing on your website, there's a six-hour training session, something called MUFON Field Investigator Training. What is that about?
Okay, that's something done by MUFON. MUFON is Mutual UFO Network. And they have field investigators in every state in the union. And when there's a UFO sighting or something reported, they'll have field investigators go out and actually do an investigation to determine what else might have caused the situation or you know, basically to determine if it's a credible sighting or not. Mm. You know, they're pretty skeptical.
Yeah.
And, but that's a good thing because it gives credence to something that isn't explainable.
Right.
And so anybody can become one of these investigators? They just need to go through the training?
I believe you have to be a member of MUFON, and then you have to go through the training and be certified before they'll accept you to be an investigator.
Hey, Bob, have you seen a UFO? Have you seen a sighting?
I've seen something that was unexplainable clear back when I was a kid.
Yeah? What was that?
Well, I don't know what it was.
You got to go through the training, huh?
Yeah, yeah, but what did it look like? Was it a bright light? Was it a silver disc in the sky?
It was a flying craft. I mean, at the time, I was about 12 years old and on a scout camp out over by in the Black Hills of South Dakota. And in the middle of the night, about 3 o'clock in the morning, I was awakened and heard and seen something that was pretty unexplainable. I don't know what it was. I mean,
yeah,
it didn't sound like any kind of helicopter or anything like that, but it sounded more like it could have been some kind of a jet engine or something, but it seemed awful low to the ground to be something like that.
Because yeah.
It was between me and the mountain that was off in the distance. And then it took off, and I mean, it moved way faster than anything I'd ever seen before.
Yeah, that's something
that happened a long, long time ago in the middle of the night. And since then, I've wondered what I've seen, or if I dreamt something.
A lot of people wonder that. The folks in Arizona, where they saw the lights in a triangular pattern, you know, over the city, and then they took off, and then it's happened multiple times, no explanation for that. In fact, I think even the governor of Arizona at one point said, well, yeah, it sure seems like those were UFOs to me. But
sure could have been that.
And then I feel compelled that I need to tell my story because my wife and I were driving across country. This was many years ago. And we were driving through Utah at night. And in the middle of Utah, there's nothing, right? We're just on the road. And I'm looking at in the rearview mirror. And what looks like a semi, some part behind us. There aren't a lot of cars on the road because it's like 1 o'clock in the morning. And I asked her to look behind because I'm looking in the rearview mirror. I said, does that semi look taller than semis typically? I mean, just based on the lights.
It's a big semi.
I don't know. It's kind of hard to say because maybe we're driving downhill. I said, well, sure. You know, that could be the case. Anyway, so I'm watching. I'm keeping an eye on the rearview mirror. And then all of a sudden, the two headlights on what I thought was a semi, they go from horizontal to vertical.
Oh.
Whoa.
And nice. I said, now look. What is that? And she looks, and she saw, the vertical. So now we're like, holy crap. And we're driving because we're going to sleep at a rest stop.
Oh,
because
Lordy.
That's the only place at 1 o'clock in the morning because we didn't have a hotel figured out or anything. So we're driving on this road, whatever it is. It's one of the interstates. And we come around this corner where on our right, there's a hill or a mountain or an outcropping. You know how Utah is. They've got all these towers coming out of the sand. And we're going on a big curve. Okay, so I expect
the semi,
you know, on a curve,
on.
I'm not going to see the semi for a while.
Right, until it
while
turns.
We're in the curve, I'm looking in the rearview mirror, and it swings way out, and I see it. So it wasn't even on the road at that point.
What?
And then now we're like freaking out, and we pull into the rest stop, turn off the engine, and wait
for it to go by.
Nothing ever came by.
No.
What?
There wasn't a car, a truck, or anything for a good 10 minutes.
Wow.
That was definitely something.
It was something.
That's a great story.
Right, Bob?
Wow.
It was unidentified.
Exactly. Unidentified and unexplained to this day.
Flying object.
Yep. Who's your keynote speaker? Is it the guy you mentioned earlier? Yeah, who is it? I'm sorry?
Jan Harzen.
What does Jan talk about?
He's their CEO of MUFON.
Oh, okay. All right. And how many people do you expect to crowd into Hewlett, Wyoming?
Well, we don't have any idea. This is our first attempt at doing something like this. We hope it becomes an annual event.
Yeah? All right.
I mean, during the summertime, we host a Hewlett Hammond Jam during the Sturgis bike rally.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And we get 30, 40,000 people show up in one day during...
Well,
that event.
You need to hand out flyers during the Hammond Jam for this UFO thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We had posters up, and we were handing stuff out. So, and we had aliens around town at the time. So they.
Oh, you did? were they legal?
nice.
All right. Well,
check.
Oh, good. Yeah, safe harbor. So, Bob, thank you very much, and good luck with your event. We'll keep an eye on what happens out there and see if you get visited. Will you give an alien discount if one should show up?
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you, sir. Have a great time.
Okay, thank you.
And, what's the website if somebody wants to come visit?
It's Devil's Tower UFO Rendezvous.com or DTUFOR.com.
DTUFOR.com, which is easier because most people don't know how to spell rendezvous.
DTUFOR.com.
DTUFOR.com. That's easy.
All right.
We'll send everybody there. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Have a good day.
All right. There he goes. Back to my hometown of Hewlett, Wyoming.
Wow. That is a good story, though, that you told.
Yeah, hasn't that... That was freakish,
I was like, I was on this edge of my seat.
We thought we were about to die.
Really? I would think so, too. Especially when the semi-lights went.
And I wasn't the only one. We both saw it.
Exactly.
So
isn't that better,
corroborating,
though?
Yes.
Isn't that better for somebody? Oh, gosh.
Yes,
that's crazy.
Right. It is.
Crazy,
all right.
Crazy.
So we're into the last a few minutes of the program here, and it's gone by like this.
I know.
Like this. Skylar... I know you take some time off of your work to be on the program, and we're so appreciative of you for doing that because you could be out there selling homes or showing homes or listing or talking to investors or whatever it is that you're doing out
there. Just real estating. I just call it real estating.
Real estating out there in Nashville. All right. But it's nice. Do you still have a boss or are you more or less independent?
I mean, I'm pretty much independent. We have a broker who we can go to if we have any issues.
Because bosses have...
technically, yes.
Because bosses can have weird rules, can't they? I mean, your bosses can
just
make life hideous.
I mean, haven't you had that job where you dreaded going because of all the silly rules or just...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think everybody has.
It's funny because there's this article that I was sent today about the 10 ridiculous work rules. I can't even say that, work rules.
Yeah.
And I never, fortunately, I mean, I've had bosses that I didn't like, but I never had any silly rules really to abide by. And I'm not going to read all 10 of them, but I will highlight a couple of them. First and foremost, these are all different accounts of people. So they write, the first one says, in theory, we are allotted 3 personal absences a year, which cover unforeseen circumstances like a family emergency, car trouble, sick kid, etc. But in order to be approved, you need to get consent from the manager in advance. No one that I know has ever actually been approved in advance for their unforeseen emergency.
Wow.
That's crazy.
It's so funny. This one, 2 weeks after I left my previous job, a memo went around saying people aren't allowed to look out of the windows at work anymore. It's a big ass glass building.
These next two,
these are hilarious. So this guy or girl, I drive valet. The company handbook says you're never allowed to back up ever. You absolutely cannot do the job without reverse. It's impossible. It's in there because of liability and our insurance policy. This way, it can always be the valet's fault if an accident occurs ever. How can you drive valet and never put it in reverse?
Yeah. I don't know. Like, it's impossible.
That's crazy.
And then this business owner, he said, I used to own a pest control company. One day I walked into one of our bays and found a technician licking the inside of a cap from a bottle of herbicide. When asked, he told me that he just wanted to know how it tastes. I told him that any future pesticides will taste like unemployment and created a no ingesting pesticide rule complete with signs.
The things that people have to do.
Yeah, just to prevent people, I don't know, from dying?
From doing stupid things.
From ingesting herbicides or pesticides?
That's crazy.
So I never had any, like, crazy rules. I mean, like I said, I've had bosses that were like, iffy.
I had one rule that I remember as a teenager. I worked at Disneyland. And I couldn't wear makeup.
What?
Yeah. And I'm like,
No one could wear makeup like that.
Are you kidding me? You know, I can understand.
What?
Yeah, you can't wear makeup. Well, you can't wear, I should preface this, heavy makeup, like the blue eyeshadow and all that stuff. But, you know, okay. I have got blonde eyelashes and blonde eyebrows. You can't see me unless I put something on. I'm just one blank face, you know.
Oh gosh.
I don't want people to look, you know, like not like clowns, but you know how clean. People get creative.
Yeah. Well, I was putting eyebrow pencil on and mascara so you can see my eyes.
Yeah.
And I got in trouble.
Well,
Disney's had a lot of rules that I've heard about that are probably...
Well, they took off the mustache rule for guys. That was nice.
Yeah. Oh, they did.
I think so.
Yeah, there used to be that. I mean, back working for the Ducks, when the Disney mm-hmm. folks owned the mm-hmm. Ducks, you were not too. Allowed to have facial hair.
Oh, did you have to shave?
Oh, yeah.
Clean cut.
Really?
Sure.
See,
yeah.
There you go.
And then all of
Is
a sudden...
Is that even legal?
Yeah, and then all of a sudden all the players started growing facial hair, and the coaches and the and the TV play-by-play guys started getting goatees
the Movember,
and all this.
November.
I was just about to say, then Movember. They like hosted Movember.
Yeah, so it's almost like a beard is part and parcel with hockey now.
Oh, well.
And with all sports, for that matter.
That's okay.
All right, so we love talking about animals on the show. We have the turtles, and we have dogs, and there's a stray dog problem in some areas. But here's a creative use for stray dogs to kind of put them to work for good.
Yeah. I thought this was quite interesting. In Thailand, there's a lot of stray dogs, and they're turning them into street guardians. So they've invented this vest that they're going to put on these dogs. They have sensors on them that transmit live streaming videos. So whenever the dog barks, it shows what the animal sees. So it's pretty cool.
So the bark... It activates the video.
Yeah,
it activates the video. It's a hidden camera, and it's you could see it via mobile phone or a computer application. It's an advertising agency in Thailand that developed this, and they call it a smart vest. So when the dogs are running around the street, this basically can help the community and the dogs because it kind of puts them to work. And they came up with this idea. It's a subsidiary of South Korea's Samsung Electronics. Anyway, the foundation, they were formed to help the stray dogs. And they're working with them together, and hopefully they're going to do this. And in March, they actually brought it to them, and hopefully the developer says it's going to work. So they're introducing
it. And they just catch bad people, or kind of?
Well, think about when a dog barks at somebody who's doing something. Obviously, they're either doing something wrong or breaking into a car or breaking into a house or accosting somebody. So dogs usually have that sixth sense, I think, you know, about somebody doing something.
Kind of like Minority Report-ish, a little bit.
Yeah.
Like catch them before they do it.
Yeah. My goodness.
But they're really cute. They got these cute little vests.
And it's not cruel.
No, not at all.
All right.
Not at all.
Take your word for it. You know what? People do silly things in life, and when they do it in grand style, on a grand scale, then the folks over at the Guinness Book of World Records show up at their front doorstep.
And they recognize them, yes. So the 2018 Guinness World Records are in. And as you can imagine, a lot of these are crazy. And the pictures really tell the stories. I used to love looking at the pictures. But when it comes to long fingernails, one woman has nailed it. And her name is Ayanna Williams. She lives in Houston, Texas, and has fingernails with a combined total length of 18 feet, 10.9 inches long.
Can she?
So that makes her the current Guinness World Record holder in that category.
So you're saying total, every single finger, if you put it end to end.
If you put it all together, it would be 18 feet long, 18 feet, 10.9 inches long.
Wow.
Now, the previous record holder, Chris the Duchess Walton, had nails that were 19 feet, 9 inches long, but she was scratched from the record book after she cut them. So, yeah.
What?
So that left... that left room for Ayanna Williams. Apparently that might be a rule.
Wow.
You know,
that's
can't
weird.
Cut them ever. There's a Chinese woman who has set the record for world's longest eyelashes at nearly 5 inches long.
No.
Yeah. Natural eyelashes?
Oh my God.
You know, I didn't, I should have looked into that. Cause I'm like, I should have looked in something.
Yeah. Because how does that work? Natural. I mean, you can't grow your eyelashes.
Well, you can with chemicals.
But you can. With chemicals.
You heard of Latisse, right?
No.
I was just about to say, Latisse.
I'm not into the beauty products.
Latisse was made from allergan. And it was supposed to be for people with glaucoma.
Yeah.
But they noticed the people with glaucoma that they were doing the testing on, their eyelashes grew.
They were getting beautiful, marvelous eyelashes.
So they turned it and they said, well, wait a minute, we've got something here, so... Instead of using it for glaucoma, we're going to put it in the cosmetic industry.
Yeah.
And they made a fortune.
I almost used it, but I was just afraid of the side effects. I get so scared.
What's the side effect? Glaucoma?
No, the only side effect, there's another product that's out that the side effect is, and I have talked to my ophthalmologist about this, where actually, you know those little brown spots in your eyes and in the color of your eye?
Yeah.
Those little flecks,
mm-hmm.
They become darker.
Oh, yeah.
They will become darker.
Oh, interesting. All right. Okay. Wow.
But that's not from Latisse. It's from the other product.
So the Guinness people, they're going to put this book out, right? It's a table book. And
yeah, it already came out. It's the 63rd edition. Yeah. There's also this cute little guy, an 83-year-old great-grandfather from L.A. who has been named the world's oldest bodybuilder. And he is in shape. He is fit, let me tell you.
How old is he?
Nice.
83.
Oh.
Yeah, he's cute. Sweet.
Kind of gives us hope. We can still do it.
Is he ripped?
Oh, he's ripped. Like, he's got a six-pack.
Yeah.
Wow.
Speaking of ripped, there's a weatherman from Alabama.
I'm sorry.
He was doing his weather forecast on television. God. He's on the local TV station. He's live on the air. And you got to tip your hat to the guy. The fact that he didn't care one bit that the entire television audience of Alabama was out there watching, and he just let one loose on live television. What he did is, you know how the weathermen, they walk left to right, and then they turn around.
He crop dusted?
He
crop dusted.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Not quite, but he did walk over to the right side as you're looking at the television screen. And he gave it a little, like, a, you know how you bend over just a bit to give a little extra pinch? And he gave it the good old power blast. And boom, here comes the southerly winds as he's doing his forecast. Now, this is
easy. Dynamite.
This is easily Googled. You can find it, but we did post the video if you want to watch it. It's on our Facebook page for Phil Hewlett and Friends, funny. And it is just ridiculous.
Don't light a match.
Actually, I have to see this video.
Yeah, you have to because, you know, I mean, the guy's a famous weatherman for a moment. But is that a thing you want to be famous for?
Oh, you never know. He could come to L.A. now.
Hey, quickly here. I have the 7 signs your marriage will last. And you just got married recently, Skylar, so this is good news for you.
Yes.
Your best friends. Your partner is the one you want to call when things are awesome or awful. And you have no real secrets because you trust each other implicitly, right? And that's what you have, isn't it?
Of course.
Of course. Now, you enjoy spending time together. That goes without saying, right? Let's see. You have each other's backs. You'll go to the ends of the earth to protect each other, right? Let's see. You can be honest and talk about stuff that you know.
Stuff.
You know that you can't talk to anybody else about. The relationship is easy. That doesn't mean there's no conflict, but it does mean that you can resolve things pretty easily after there is conflict. And you want the best for each other. You're not in it for yourself, you know. It's like what's mine is yours is mine. You share your dreams and all that sort of thing.
Mine is what's yours is mine, and what's mine is mine.
What's his is mine. Yeah.
And Skylar, I know it hasn't been long, and but I don't know what married life has done to him. Has it aged him any? But you still think he's the cutest person in the room.
I think he is the absolute hottest person in the room.
Oh.
And does he look over across the room and see you and think to himself, she thinks I'm hot.
And he's like, what's wrong with your eye? As I'm like trying to wink at him. He's like, I don't wink very well.
No, you don't? You're a bad winker?
No.
Yeah.
I have a really bad winker. For like, what
hey, remember lunch ladies with the hairnets and the bad shoes, the comfortable shoes? And how back in the day, they used to cook the food
they
for you.
Apron on.
Smell the food cooking when you were at
those
school. That doesn't happen so much anymore.
Miss that.
But
cream
I miss
corn.
I miss lunch ladies too. There's one. This was in the New York Post. A lunch lady is now accused of having sex with a teenager in the school kitchen.
Oh my God.
Gross.
She was cooking up something good.
Wow. Well, I know the lunch ladies that I had.
What I want to know is
touch with a 10-foot pole.
Was she wearing a hairnet?
Yeah, and an apron.
Hey, thank you so much for tuning in. Don't forget to go to PhilHewlettAndFriends.com, subscribe to the program, listen to part one. This was part two. Listen to this one as well. Oh, you just did. Thank you. Special thanks to our executive producer, Mike Stark. Our theme song is composed and performed by Russ Monson. For Ricky the intern, for Skylar Charisma and Kelly Bennett, I'm Phil Hewlett. Talk to you next time on Phil Hewlett and Friends.